Hey everyone, I want you to check out our sponsor, BustedTees.com. They sell really cool clothing and apparel, all of it inspired by your favorite shows, anime, sci-fi, video games, movies. That's BustedTees.com. And then at checkout, you want to use my name, Jason, 25945. That's all one word, Jason 25945. That's going to get you a discount, and it's going to help this show. That site again, BustedTees.com, like t-shirts, and that code again, Jason 25945. BustedTees.com, designs that pop culture.
Gentlemen, let's broaden our minds.
Who has a mixtape? Who needs a mixtape? Who makes a mixtape? Who needs a mixtape? You do, do.
Don't you wanna listen to our mixtape? Raise the roof to move your feet. Come along and laugh with our mixtape.
Ha 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 ha.
Waka 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 waka. Don't you wanna listen to our mixtape? Sing along and clap to the beat. Settle in and listen to our mixtape. And now the music vanishes. Enjoy your buttock sandwiches.
All right, everyone. We told you we were going to be coming back, and we are here to do that. Don't crack the boner joke again. People don't know we already started this twice, and the first time there was a boner joke. You just missed it, guys, because Matt fucked up. You don't get to hear the boner joke. But what you do get to hear is who we are. I'm Jason
Shucks.
Emmett. I'm still Jason Emmett.
I'm Casey Masterpiece.
What's the kid, Matt?
Stu about jumped in there on you.
I'm Stu D.
Kevin's just sitting there like, oh, that's me. all right, so we are going to be doing, we talked about music that changed the industry or musicians that changed the industry, and we thought it'd be really fun to do a bonus pop culture episode where we talk about movies that changed the industry and how that happened. We each picked two movies. We're gonna go over them here quickly. Just like always, I'm going to give a little back story, and then I'm going to talk to you guys about why you picked them and what those movies mean to you. I think a lot of what's going to happen, not on everybody, but these, when you hear other people's choices, it's going to click shit in your own head, too. So we're going to start with Matt. Matt is first on our list.
What obscure things did he come up with?
Only
time?
One, and I get it. You might not, but I think you've heard of it, I'm sure. No, the first one makes perfect sense. Yeah. When I was putting, this is so funny because I was talking to Matt. I'm like, I got four, so I got to figure out which two I want. And Matt's like, well, these are my two. I said, thank you. Now I have three because he picked one that I was thinking about. So it just was solving the problem for me. Your first pick comes from 1995. Do you want to tell the folks at home what it is?
Yeah, it's the classic animated by Pixar Studios film Toy Story.
Toy Story from 1995. So cowboy toy Woody, played by Tom Hanks, belongs to a young boy named Andy, and they are bestest of friends. But when Woody sees his position as Andy's favorite toy jeopardized when his parents bring him home a Buzz Lightyear, who was played by Tim Allen, he starts freaking out. And even worse than that, Buzz actually thinks he's real. He thinks he's a real spaceman on a mission to return to his home planet. And through a series of events, Woody and Buzz find themselves captured by the sadistic neighbor kid, Sid. And they have to escape his clutches, reunite with Andy before the family moves away. This is believed to be the film that turned animation from hand drawing to digital. This was the movie that did it. Up until this point, everything was hand drawn for the most part. You'd see a little computer generated here and there. This movie was all computer generated, CGI. It was also the first time an animated film was nominated for a Best Original Screenplay. And do you know why that was? Because up and until that point,
that good?
There was no category for Best Animated Feature. It didn't exist.
Oh.
So this movie changed that too. So Matt, 1995 Toy Story, tell the folks at home why you chose this movie. This was the one that was on my list. I was considering it, and I was like, okay, thanks, Matt. As long as it gets talked about, I'm happy.
I mean, before then, you know, animated movies were, like you said, they were all primarily hand-drawn with a little bit of CGI. Before
maybe.
That, it was just exclusively hand-drawn.
I think, if I recall, Beauty and the Beast was hand animated, but the scene where they were in like the ballroom, yep. they like with CG'd, the chandelier. Yeah, they CG'd some of the stuff, mm-hmm. but like, yeah, this was the first all CG. Yeah.
Yeah, all CG. The voice acting in it's great. And, you know, throw back to our recast episode. You got Wallace Shawn as Rex the dinosaur. Just that's
Jim Varney
great casting, by the way.
Jim Varney is Slinky Dog in it.
R.I.P. Ernest.
We had
was that one of his last roles?
It was one
probably
of them,
yeah. like Toy Story.
I think Toy Story 2 might have been his
last. Yeah, because I don't think he was in 3. I know he wasn't in 4, and I don't think he made it in 3.
He wasn't in 3.
They just recast it, and it's fine. But
yeah, they got a sound alike.
We also
like what Tom Hanks' brother does now for Woody, actually.
Yeah, he does a lot of... Tom Hanks says whenever you hear a toy or something, like a version, and it's like, there's a snake. That's not Tom Hanks. That's his brother. Yeah, his brother does know that. Yeah, it's crazy.
Yep. sounds just like him.
We talked to Pat Fraley on this show. We did an interview with Pat Fraley, and what's funny is he does the voices of Buzz Lightyear when it's not Tim Allen, and Tim Allen found out that Tom Hanks' brother was the one. He got kind of mad. He's like, because he's like, why can't like my brother do that or whatever? And I think Pat Fraley's like, I was just glad that he didn't figure that out ahead of time because I made a lot of money doing that stuff. Like, you know, because if he'd have figured that out, it was too late at that point. But yeah, it's funny because I think Tom Hanks has said like previously he didn't really know at first that his brother was doing it. His brother's done a lot of stuff. All the running scenes in a movie that could have been brought up here for Forrest Gump, that was his brother running in Forrest Gump. Yeah, almost all the scenes where you see him running, it's actually his brother that does the running.
I'll be damned.
Did not know that. Yeah, even when he was a little kid and his braces came flying.
Yeah, that was... No. Toy Story, I would bet, I remember very well, but I do you guys remember going to the theater and seeing Toy Story and being like, oh my God, like mind blown. I've
seen every Toy Story film in the theater.
I have as well. Too. Yeah.
So good.
But just watching like how different it looked and how different it felt. And
yeah,
it's like a animated movie, but with a really good and kind of deep storyline. If you think about it.
Yeah.
And I remember it was, I would see it on Thanksgiving night and my car broke down on the way to meet people and on like a back road. And I was like, I don't know. And this is 1995. I didn't have a cell phone.
Did you hear banjos?
No, thank God. But a dude did pull up and was like, hey,
you got a pretty mouth.
Thank you, both of you, for that. By the way, my next pick is Deliverance. No, fuck you guys.
Can agree on. Yeah.
You guys. No, this
changed
guy.
Changed the way you feel about the woods.
Ooh, that movie changed the way I feel about a lot of things. Mm-hmm. Banjos. Mm-hmm. Banjos. Mm-hmm.
Kentucky.
No, it didn't change that a lot.
Yeah, this is pretty much the same.
So let's go into your second pick. I think everybody would agree the impact that Toy Story had on nowadays most animated films are computer generated now. Very few are hand drawn anymore.
Most of them. It's actually kind of odd when one is hand drawn at this point.
Yeah. Well, a lot of times even if they look hand drawn, they're animated. Like even South Park. Do you know that South Park went from doing the like cutout things to eventually they put all of that into a computer program that makes it look like that, so they don't have to animate it the same way. It's a lot faster and easier and cheaper on them because it cuts down the time. It
makes sense. Yeah,
yeah.
But you guys gotta remember
there's actually a documentary about like 7 days to air or something like that. Like they have 7 days from start to finish
for a South Park episode. That's insane. That is
insane. Watch the documentary. They literally film the entire process of doing an episode. Like voice acting and all.
I want to put something.
They have no script. They start from nothing and go to an episode a week.
I really want to put something in perspective for you guys for a second. Because we think Toy Story now. You know, my kids grew up with Toy Story in their lives from day one. This is 1995, all computer generated. To put this into perspective for those of you at home listening, in 1996, my mom bought our first computer in our house. And it was a 486. We had America Online. I went to watch, this is a true story, I've told it before, I wanted to watch, you had to log into the phone line, right?
Did you use one of those CDs?
Welcome. You've got mail. We used lots of those CDs, man. Lots of those free hour CDs. Mm-hmm. I wanted to watch, I remember talking to my buddy Randy, and he's like, dude, on the phone, regular phone.
Who's
not,
that?
Not cell phone. He's like, dude, have you heard they released the trailer for Mortal Kombat. So I'm like, holy shit. So I got on the computer. This is a 2-minute long trailer. I went onto a site. There weren't that many websites. I hit the button just to watch it. Let it buffer. While it was buffering, I went in the other room, watched a movie, came back. When the movie was done, watched the 2-minute trailer for Mortal Kombat. I was like, holy shit. That was the best thing ever. That's 1996. This computer-generated movie was made in 1995. The computing power that it took to make this movie, we take for granted now. It was insanity, and this movie took years for them to make. And if you ever go back and watch some of that behind-the-scenes stuff, it's crazy. It's just crazy.
And then on top of that, Toy Story 2 almost never existed because I think the entire film was done, and then the hard drive it was on crashed.
But one of the guys,
one person had a backup.
Had a backup at his house.
It was like his wife or something.
Yeah, something bizarre. Yeah, I've heard about that. Yeah, like the whole system crashed and everything was lost, and they thought it was done. And they'd already spent millions and lots of time, and luckily he had most of it, I think, and they had to recreate some of it or something like that. Yeah,
that's crazy.
So Matt's next choice comes from 1954. And I know Kevin knows this. I'm going to have Matt tell the name of the movie, and I want to know if Stu has ever heard of this movie. And say it the way it needs to be said, because really, if you're talking about this movie, you got to say it with the director. That's how people know it. So, Matt, what is your next choice?
Yeah. Like you said, this film is from 1954, directed by Akira Kurosawa. It is Seven Samurai.
Seven Samurai from Akira Kurosawa. So here's
your choice.
You were shaking. Never heard of it. Which is shocking, and I'll tell you why. Go ahead.
It's been remade into several westerns.
Almost every, not even westerns. Everything.
Magnificent
Seven. So many movies that you've seen.
I had a whole
list
pulled up earlier.
So I have some too. Akira Kurosawa, a samurai answers a village's request for protection after he falls on hard times. The town needs protection from bandits, so the samurai gathers six others to help him teach the people how to defend themselves, and the villagers provide the soldiers with food. A giant battle occurs when 40 bandits attack the village. Considered to be the most remade or reworked referenced movie in cinema history. A town is about to be attacked by bandits, so they hire somebody. You were thinking A-Team?
Yeah.
What if I said Three Amigos? The town.
Desperado?
What if we said Blazing Saddles?
I've never seen that.
You said Desperado. Seven. Magnificent Seven is a direct ripoff of this.
Really?
Yep. Like 6 years after the original came out, they remade it.
Countless films. Like I said, countless films have used the framework or things based off of this movie. The Magnificent Seven was directed, directly inspired. Star Wars was inspired by this film. A Bug's Life.
Yep.
John Wick. Predator. Yep. All have elements of Seven Samurai.
I mean, The Mandalorian.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. This movie is like considered...
Even the music from The Mandalorian is
absolutely almost, you know, so much. I never even thought about that till you just said it. that doom 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 doom. Yeah, it's so perfect. Yeah. This movie is,
which by the way, I highly recommend everybody go and watch these films that we're going to be talking about if you've never seen them. Seven Samurai, I believe, currently is streaming on HBO Max. If you would like to check it out,
so you
kind of let the fact that it's black and white and in Japanese.
No, I've seen it. I actually,
you know, sway you from
back
it.
Back when I was in school, in college, I had a film history class, and we talked and we watched this movie just to. What something you just said though a few minutes ago, I want to hit on is you mentioned westerns. This film right here is considered to be the groundwork for nearly the entire western film genre that launched later, like that my dad still watches to this day. That whole premise of gangs are taking over a town. They got to get somebody in. Like I said, Blazing Saddles. Or Paws of Fury, if you have not been watching my TikToks, Paws of Fury is a remake of Blazing Saddles.
Again, I've never seen Blazing Saddles.
You've never seen Blazing Saddles?
Stunned silence.
Oh, it's going to be so much fun to watch that with Stewie. Oh my God, that'll be like a fun Twisted Kid we'll do together. You'll love it. You'll fucking love it. I didn't know you've never seen Blazing Saddles. Oh,
we'll
my God.
I have to bleep a lot.
I mean, I only seen like bits and pieces.
You're going to crack up, that dude. It was made so at a good. Different
time. I mean, I only know, really.
We just have Kevin pop on and say it for us.
I just know really that one
part.
Well,
we don't say it.
Get away with it.
I only really know that one clip of, where are the white women at?
Cleavon Little. He is so good in that movie, man. Candy Graham from Mr. Mongo. Candy Graham for Mr. Mongo. Mongo light candy. It's so...
The dad from Webster.
I mean, it's Mel Brooks, man. It's Mel Brooks, and you'll fucking love it. And it's the early great Mel Brooks, like, you know. So good.
Yeah,
so,
I've never seen it.
Well, we're going to go into Stewie's list and two movies I hope to God he's seen because they're on his list. He's like, never seen them. The first one comes from 1999, and I'm just going to say two words, and this is enough if there weren't more. Two words will make you think of the movie, and two words will explain how this movie changed cinema. Bullet time. Do I really need to say much more?
No.
1999. Again, remember, 1999. We're not even to 2000 yet, and this is Bullet Time. Bullet Time gets created for The Matrix. 1999. It's been that fucking long. I'm sitting here doing math. It's, what, 2024 now? So 25 fucking years since we saw The Matrix in theaters. It was crazy. So this movie helped pave the way for future special effects in films. The effect of Bullet Time was created for this movie. I think people watch stuff later and they kind of take it for granted because they've seen it a million times, but we had never seen that. Not only did this movie have great breakthroughs with computer generated stuff, but what you need to remember is Bullet Time, the Bullet Time effect was not computer generated.
No.
They took a room. They knew they wanted to do this effect, and what they did is they took a room, it's all round with like green screens around it, and they put multiple cameras all in a circle. And those cameras, it was almost like stop motion. They would all go off one after the other and get like a second clip. So when they would do it, they could literally spin the camera around while they moved the person. Now, they used computers, obviously, to help the effect. But that's not the only thing this movie changed. So one of the things this movie, we all take that for granted. We've seen Bullet Time made fun of. I mean, Shrek makes fun of Bullet Time, for shit's sake. It's everywhere. After
everyone makes
movie.
Fun of Matrix.
But the other thing this movie really did, and I don't know. Well, let me ask you first, Stu, what made you pick this movie before I go? Because I want to see if you even thought of this, like, because I didn't. But what made you pick The Matrix?
Well, it was the first time. Well, first because of the Bullet Time, but also the animation on it with like some of the bullets, I guess, and some of the scenes gave it kind of like sound waves, I guess you could call it.
Yeah, like the bullets breaking through the air, kind of we got those like weird ripple effects.
Yeah, so the graphics on it was pretty different than some of the other past movies, but also the way the storyline itself.
It was a lot different than any story we'd ever seen. Like, I don't care for... I like the second one, had there been a good third one to tack on to close the story out. But you can watch The Matrix and it holds up.
I love watching it constantly.
The first Matrix holds up. It's a fantastic movie. You know, even if the sequel's blue, the first one's good. And could have... There was never intended to be a sequel, just so you guys know.
Right. It was supposed to be the Star Wars killer.
It was so groundbreaking and it made so much money that they went to the Wachowskis, right? The Wachowskis. Yeah. And they said, we want more. So they did more.
Unfortunately.
So the one thing you didn't hit on, I didn't even think about it, but not only did this movie changed fight scenes in American movies.
Oh, yeah.
This movie was the movie that used all the wire work and stuff. That was done in a lot of Asian culture films, but it wasn't done here.
The fantasy Asian movies.
So it kind of brought wire work as used in the mainstream U.S. market. But here's the thing. So Keanu Reeves' stunt double, Chad Stahelski, I think is how you pronounce his name.
Sure.
He's actually went on. Nailed he's it. He's still a stunt double, but he also directs and stuff now and actually does some pretty big stuff. I think he worked on, I think he still works with him, like, even on John Wick, but he actually has done some directing and stuff like that since then. But he said of this film, he said, The Matrix literally transformed the industry back in the day. Fight scenes were secondary to car chases and horse chases and helicopter chases and motorboat chases. And when fight scenes were focused on single gun battle stuff or Arnold Schwarzenegger pummeling you to death with his hands, he says, but now action movies want their big sequences designed around the fight. Think of any action movie in the past decade or so that doesn't have a bitchin' fight scene. The Matrix said, look what we can do with your heroes. And he's right. The Matrix took fight scenes and made them the center of... If you took all the really cool fight sequence out of The Matrix, it'd be a much shorter movie and not as interesting. But those fight scenes, like you said, the ripple effects with the bullets, like they would slow them down. They would focus on shit. And every action movie we got after The Matrix was like, oh, what if we take this really cool fight sequence and we highlight it and we do that in a way to the degree that sometimes
put the camera about this far away from a punch that's about to happen.
Right. Stylize the shit out of that.
They got right in there with it. Yeah.
Sometimes it's to the detriment of the film because it's like, hello, Fast and Furious.
What's going on? There's
your fucking action sequences. We get that you want them bigger and better, but they're obnoxious and stupid is what they are. But
It does.
And they did. They did do pretty good with the engine going through the engine part. That sequence.
Listen, man, they had some fun ones, and now we've got Vin Diesel driving down the side of a dam, which is so stupid. And we don't know how yet because the movie we got to have a second part. But I think he's going to part the water like Moses. That's what me and my kid think. He's just going to part the water.
Yeah,
he's going to pray.
An everyday criminal turn into a superpower.
Man, it's ridiculous. More than two decades pass, though, The Matrix remains eerily relevant to the world we currently live in a spooky way if you go back and watch it now. And just so you guys don't, if you don't know, I do TikTok videos related to this show. Not this show, but mixtape TikToks. And one of the things I haven't talked about yet, but it's on my list, actors who were cast for movies. The Matrix was offered to Will Smith. He turned it down.
Thank God.
He turned it down to do Wild Wild West.
He slapped the script right out of their hands.
Turned it down to do Wild Wild West. Slapped it right out there. Stu's second.
That's what you call a career mistake.
Yeah, well.
Yeah, he is.
He did okay for himself.
Yeah, I think he's fine.
He's all right.
That's kind of.
Stu's next choice comes from 2000. Believe it or not, 2009. Does it seem that old? It really doesn't. It
doesn't seem that young either.
Stu, why don't you tell the folks at home what your second choice was?
Avatar.
Yeah, he really likes M. Night Shyamalan, and I don't think it was that groundbreaking.
No.
In 2009, we received one of the biggest films in cinema history, James Cameron's Avatar. Yes. Let's first mention its visual effects. It was nearly 70% computer generated, but its digital and live action elements are virtually inseparable. You can't hardly break. Mm. There are so many things in there where I literally watch this show on Digital Corridor. I watch it on YouTube, and these guys, they're effects artists, and they go in and break down effects in movies, and they talk about good ones about. I love them.
Yeah.
And they have done scenes where they guessed things were CGI, only to find out they were in Avatar, especially the new one, only to find out they were wrong, because that's how some of the seamless some of the stuff was. So the film was shot with the Fusion camera system. This is a digital 3D apparatus co-developed by James Cameron. He actually helped create this thing.
I was going to say, isn't this the movie that re-revolutionized 3D?
3D, absolutely, and it's because of this. They created a way to film 3D on a much smaller setup. They did this new lens system that redefined the way that 3D films look. Before that, we had the red glasses with the line around them, and that's how we did 3D. But now you go with the polarized lenses, and things actually look 3D. It's weird, the difference between the two. And yes, that's all because of Avatar and James Cameron. Another technical innovation Avatar introduced to Hollywood was virtual cinematography. Almost all of its, in other words, they would set up the cinematography, the idea of it, in a virtual environment, and so they could scale it, they could take it with them, they could kind of look at things a little different than what people had done previously, where you had to have an actual physical environment to do the cinematography. All your lighting and stuff in Avatar is done in the computer, and it was one of the first movies to do that. So that kind of saved them a lot too. A movie like Avatar would have never been able to be made before this. Like they couldn't have, it would have, but it would have been weird. Can you imagine Avatar done without computer generated stuff? It would be very different.
Just a bunch of really weird skin suits.
You're right. Yeah. I can give you.
I bet you it'd be like Cirque Soleil.
Go watch. Yes.
Yeah.
It'd be like cats. Go watch the 1982 Dune and then watch the 2020 Dune or whatever. And that's going to,
I recently did that.
Did you really?
That's, yeah.
And the drastic differences in special effects.
3 weeks ago.
There's a drastic difference in the special effects. And you can see how.
That popcorn bucket, that's a very real thing. I just saw it at the theater yesterday.
The Dune bucket?
The one that looks like Shia LaBeouf.
I just said the Dune bucket.
Have you seen that?
Weird to me.
What's a Shia LaBeouf?
Popcorn bucket?
No.
At the movie theater.
I know what popcorn buckets and movie theaters are.
Yes.
We don't know.
There's a promotional popcorn bucket for Dune 2.
I love Matt.
That looks like Shia LaBeouf coming up out of the sand.
The worm.
The sandworm.
Oh, yeah. We haven't seen that.
The sandworm. No, I haven't seen the popcorn bucket.
We've seen that.
Trust me. Google eggs. The popcorn bucket. You'll know why it's going like super viral right now.
Does it look like a penis or something?
It looks like a fleshlight.
There you go. I'm going to buy one.
Crazy looking fleshlight.
Finally, something that can fit my penis.
They did a sketch on Saturday Night Live about it.
The other thing is, and I want to say this before we get off of the Avatar thing, all that innovation stuff is cool. All that shit's cool that they changed all that and the impact it has. Stu just looked it up. Thank you for telling him it looked like a fleshlight. He just pulled it up. Oh, that's interesting. Okay. Go look that up, people. The other thing I want to briefly mention is how...
Now Kevin looks at
how Avatar...
Ooh, I need to get one of those for my late nights. Right?
How Avatar affected society. Do you guys remember, as sad as this is, do you remember people that were getting so depressed that Pandora wasn't real that they were like committing suicide?
Yeah, I heard about that, yeah.
They're like, I guess we need to just build this at Disneyland
Which
now.
They did, you know.
Just have and now apparently mountains.
And now apparently he's going to make 27 Avatar films. I don't know if that's necessary. I did like the new one, actually. Avatar The Way of Water.
I haven't
whatever.
Seen it yet.
It's actually really good, and it starts off right with action, which was very smart, get you in. Looks incredible. It's actually really good. It was an enjoyable movie. So we're going to go into my list next. And there are a couple movies that... I always say that like Queen's one of my favorite bands. Yet I very, very rarely talk about them. I have a couple favorite movies that I very rarely bring up. Either one of them's going to get brought Flash up. Gordon. One of these, it is Flash Gordon. One of these movies I do bring up from time to time, and that is my first choice. This one comes from 1993. Anybody want to take a guess?
Jurassic Park.
Jurassic Park, 1993.
I should have took a guess on that.
Yeah,
one.
I mean, one of my favorite movies of all time. I've read the book several times. I love it so much. So when Steven Spielberg started making this film, he intended to use all practical effects, puppets, animatronics, and something called Go Motion. Now, you'll hear a lot of people say he was going to use stop motion. Actually, he wasn't. He was going to use what's called Go Motion, very similar to stop motion. What Go Motion did, though, was figure out how to add. To take stop motion and add a motion blur to it to make it look more realistic. And I've watched all the behind the scenes and shit from this, and I've seen some of the Go Motion test footage with the Velociraptors, and it's impressive. Like, if you would have seen that version of this, it would have still been cool. Like, you would have been okay with it. Not as good. You would have known they were, you know, and he wanted to, and he used a lot of the animatronics in the actual movie anyway. You still get to see that. It would have worked. But Industrial Lights and Magic, they had a different idea, and they kind of came to it. Dennis Muren and his team produced a test sequence of a skeletal, which you can see, a skeleton dinosaur just walking. It's a few seconds of test footage on a black background. There's no, you know, it's just a skeletal dinosaur walking on a black background. And that was really cool. But no one had made living things in CGI up until this point. We'd seen... The Terminator 2 metal thing. We'd seen the tentacle in the abyss. These were all things that could have been talked about on this episode, by the way. But we'd never seen a living thing done. So Spielberg, all of them are kind of unsure. So they created an additional test featuring an actual T-Rex walking. They added skin, muscle movement, all of that to it. And if you've seen that, again, it's out there. It's 10 seconds. And it's like, holy shit. And I guess Steven Spielberg saw it and was like, oh my God, you've just... changed the entire industry, which is funny because so much so that this happened. Matt and I were talking about this the other day. One of the stop motion guys made a comment about our job's extinct. It's extinct now. And that joke ends up making it into the movie. They thought that line was so funny that there's a scene where Alan says, I think we're out of a job. And Malcolm says, don't you mean extinct? They took that because that line was actually said. So the Go Motion's out, but the model makers, they're like, we're done. Our job's over. But it wasn't. They had such an understanding of movement and how animals move and stuff that they actually figured out a way to create models that they could move that would translate into the computer directly because they understood the way that the creatures should move and stuff. So they actually ended up using them for it. Jurassic Park features... Yeah. 50 shots of all digital prehistoric, probably somewhere in the range of 50 shots of all digital prehistoric creatures, including the first full body scene of a dinosaur, which was the Brontosaurus or whatever. Yeah. It changed how films use CGI and showed that certain images could actually be obtained. You could actually do them. Also, in my opinion, 1993, still some of the best CGI out there. It holds up. It still looks great. And this is all a testament to cutting corners. When we see bad CGI, don't blame the artists. A lot of times it's because they're forced to do it and they don't have enough time to do it or don't have the budget to do it. Because what's really important in Jurassic Park did it, they took things out in the scenes and got the lighting how it should be done there. So when they take it back in, the lighting is correct. That's a lot of times what you see that looks bad is bad lighting because it's called the Uncanny Valley. When you see CGI and something about it just doesn't look right to you, that's what it's called. It's called the Uncanny Valley. And a lot of times it's lighting.
A little too human.
Yes. Usually. It's too smooth.
It's usually referred to like with robots and AI.
Yes. It's too smooth. It's like it looks right, but
looks too real.
There's no wrinkles. There's no text. Okay. Something's wrong.
Perfect example. The night walkers or day walkers, whatever they call them in I Am Legend.
Yeah.
CGI, they're fully CGI, but they're meant to look like physical, like in the room characters.
Right.
And there's just something not a little quite off. Right about it. Right. It kind of messes with your eyes.
Just slightly. Yeah. It takes you out just a little. I love that movie, but it takes you out a little bit. So,
yeah.
Yeah. Jurassic Park.
Actual actors.
For me, this was, and a lot of people say this, we'd had dinosaur movies, but this was the first time we saw dinosaurs walking on the screen and it just worked. And we were all like, holy shit, we're seeing dinosaurs. So, the next movie on my list is one that you guys, I mean, do I even have to say it? One of my favorite films of all time. And it's about Tron. Time I talk about Tron. Tron deserves to be talked about. If we're ever going to talk about it, if movies that change the industry, Tron needs to be talked about.
Yeah.
There's a reason why this is one of my favorite films of all time. I was like 7 when it came out, and I remember watching it and feeling something literally change inside of me. I knew that if someone could create worlds like this on the screen, that I wanted to tell stories. I remember just being like, oh my God, what am I watching? Because I'm a kid and I've never seen anything like this. And there's a reason. No one's ever seen anything like this. By the way, you're never going to see anything like it ever again. And I'm going to get into that in a second. Visually, this movie melted my mind as a kid. This was the first time computer-generated imagery was extensively used in a film. They had used tiny, tiny little bits for a few seconds here and there prior. But this is the first time it was used extensively in a film. It had a full 15 minutes of moving images generated entirely by computer. That was unheard of. Again, this is 1982, guys. We talked about 1995. There's something crazy that happened to Tron. If you guys don't know what I'm about to tell you, all this is going to blow your mind. There were over 200 scenes that utilized computer-generated backgrounds. Again, 1982, there were no small PCs where you could render computer-generated images and backgrounds. The animators had to map out the CGI scenes on graph paper, calculate the coordinates and angles for each element in each frame, then they had to manually input those numbers into the computer. This gets better. And there was no way for them to see how it looked until they were actually printed on 35mm and projected on a screen, so they just had to hope they get the calculations correct. Because if they didn't, it wouldn't work and they wouldn't know it till it was printed. No way of knowing.
Might as well have been shot at NASA. But
it gets
like the moon landing.
It gets, you know, see, they like could make the Tron. Landing. They could fake that moon landing. Something else. They also did something crazy with the effects of the people in the film to make them look like they were in the computer. So Tron is a mix of live action, old school animation, and CGI. All the actors performed on a blank, entirely black set. And all the effects were added in post. Their glowing circuitry on their clothes was achieved using a technique called backlight animation. This is nuts. There were 75,000 frames, right? And more than 500,000 pieces of artwork. Nobody knew how it would come together until the last minute, and reshoots were virtually impossible. They would take these scenes, they would film them on the blacklight, in the black background. Then they would take them in each frame and lay it on this board that would glow light through it and basically retake each frame to set it with the light glowing through. That's how they did it. They didn't CGI the light and none of that existed. So film creator Steve Leisberger has rightly said this. It was unlike any movie that had ever been made, and no movie will ever be made like this again. And he's right. No one will do it because they don't need to anymore.
Seems like a pain in the ass.
It was. And like I said, they didn't know. They don't know how it's going to look or turn out until they get it done. So my question is,
do they spend more than they got in from the movie?
So Tron was kind of a flop in theaters. And then because, well, a lot of people didn't know what the hell to make of it. Like, what is this? And then it started developing kind of a cult following. I don't know that it lost money, but it didn't make.
It sounds like it was expensive.
It was very difficult and very, yes, very expensive. It did. Well, that's why it was Disney. They actually approached it. There was only one studio that had the money to make this movie to begin with, and that was right. Disney. Nobody else could have done it. Over the years, it developed a cult following, and then Tron Legacy came, which is also brilliant. It looks amazing. It made a lot of money. Tron Legacy made, I think, like $200 million to its budget.
Yeah, but at that point, you're going off the name now, afterwards.
Actually, a little bit, yes, but a lot of people forgot about Tron.
Really?
We remembered it, but a lot of people didn't know. And
they forgot about Dre?
You're going into, yes, you're going into a,
shout out to our East Coast, West Coast episode.
You're going into a...
Yay, yay!
A new generation, and people didn't, younger people had never heard of Tron.
Yeah, when did that one come out?
2010.
Holy fuck.
Yeah, 2011, I think it was 2011.
So it's not far off after Avatar.
Nope, and they are working on Tron 3. It is filming right now. Tron Ares,
it's called. I didn't realize it was that far off.
Yeah. So this Jared Leto. I'm a little nervous about that, but
is he going to reprise his role? Jeff Bridges?
No, I don't think anybody's in it. It's a soft reboot.
Really?
Yeah. I don't know what they're doing with it yet.
At least a cameo.
I have a feeling he will, but you know how it goes. They won't say anything, so we don't know. So this Tron was actually disqualified from the Best Special Effects Oscar since using computers at the time was considered cheating. It came in 26 as far as movies in the box office that year, but let's consider that movies like Raiders of the Lost Ark and E.T. came out the same year, so pretty stiff competition. Stu, it took years for it to garner respect from anybody, but eventually it did, and filmmakers have stated, multiple filmmakers have stated numerous times that it was important to their process, that they understand what Tron meant to the industry. Even former Pixar chief John Lasseter once said, without Tron, there would be no Toy Story. So there you go. We bring it back around. And then we bring it to KC.
Now, you're going to have to forgive me. I was trying to look for my notes.
Oh, I got you. Don't worry. Your first film came from 1989. Do you want to tell the folks at home what your first film from 1989 is, Kevin?
I think I know.
Okay.
Goodfellas.
Stu, what movie did he do from 1989?
You just said.
No. It's Batman, you dipshit. It's your movie. 1989's Batman. It's a good movie. I picked good. 1989's Batman.
Let me just put it this way. The reason I knew it was Batman, Stu knew it was Batman.
Stu Jay said knew good it was fellas. Batman.
Somehow no, he you said good Batman.
And you
is
said
because
yeah.
apparently no other movie came out in 1989.
Might as well not have.
And it you associated
you hear 89,
with
that.
I thought about that.
I knew.
And now that I think about it, I think Goodfellas came out in 1990.
But 90 ahead. Or 91, yeah, somewhere in there. 1989's Batman. And in 1989, Batman was fucking everywhere. You couldn't throw a stone without hitting a bat symbol, man. It wasn't going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
It was due to unprecedented marketing campaign. Kev, I'm gonna offer you up the same thing that I did these guys. Before I go into any notes, why did you pick 1989's Batman? Apparently, you didn't even know you did.
Well,
so.
I don't know. I just picked.
I totally forgot.
That's a nice beat. You can dance to it.
You can bat dance to it.
Bat dance. Pretty much. Well, the reason why I chose Batman 89 is because this pretty much like reshaped superhero movies. The closest thing that we had before this was Superman, and I'm not a big fan of Superman.
I mean, I like Superman sucks compared to
character.
Batman.
I mean, that's a whole different story. But as far as the marketing, the overall storyline, all just
you got toys, here. You got lunchboxes, you got
flamethrowers,
which I remember. It was basically Captain Crunch, but still was great.
Spaceballs, the flamethrowers.
It was basically Spaceballs.
Well, I think that's what Spaceballs was making fun of was stuff like Batman.
Brilliant.
Although Spaceballs came out before Batman, but it was making fun of, I think, merchandising and films. One of the things that you need to understand is times were changing.
So that's where Gene Simmons got his brilliance from.
He'll slap his name on anything. Things were really changing here in America, even the way that people in this country were communicating. So the studio used that to their effect. That, and there was a merger with the WB at the time. So they used that to market the film on a pretty much unprecedented scale up to this point. We'd never really seen anything like it. And it took pop culture by storm, and it changed how blockbuster films were promoted. Because Batman succeeded as both a film and a brand, which is what you guys were just saying. The film was hugely popular, but so was all the marketing material and all the toys. I owned a shit ton of these toys. Oh, yeah. They did. Yeah, I still do. Stewie is literally pointing over to the wall where I have from 1989. I have the diecast Batmobile on package, and I have their version of the
Micro
Machines, the Batman. They're still on package. I still have those things. And because of that, we launched Batman the Animated Series, which was also hugely successful. And then we got an animated movie based off that, Mask of the Phantasm, at the theaters, hugely successful. They promoted this. We'd never seen promotion like this before. It did not exist. Movies were not promoted to this degree till Batman came out.
I don't think we would have had Marvel without this.
No, absolutely not. Not like this. We had Marvel before this.
And
it was nothing like this.
And
because... And
as we talked about in our film score episode, we wouldn't have any like scores by Danny Elfman without this.
I mean, he did Pee-wee and he was doing stuff, but this was the movie where he started getting taken very seriously. Where people were, after this movie,
wasn't just carnival music.
There for a minute, you guys probably forgot about, and I'll be talking about this on a TikTok. Probably forgot about some movies like Darkman and shit like that. That was all Danny. He started becoming the go-to for like superhero movies and stuff because he changed the way scores were done for superhero movies. We saw Batman on toys, fast food companies, Pepsi commercials. It was everywhere, man. It also showed.
I think that there's certain things about this movie that would kind of just make Batman like a even bigger superhero than what he was back then. When Michael Keaton says that line, I'm Batman, that was the very first time that was said.
And now it's in like every Batman movie.
Actually, a funny story about this, because of this movie and my creative writing class back in high school, they asked develop a story of like what you wanted to become in the future. And I was like, and I said I wanted to be Batman.
Stu's like, I want to be Batman.
I created a story off this freaking
I want to be Batman.
Movie.
If you can be you.
He was my
what
hero.
Is that line? If you can be yourself, unless you can be Batman, then be Batman.
Right. He was my hero at the time, so yeah.
I think there for a while he was everybody's hero, man. This got me into reading. I read comics.
He wasn't the one we need, but he was the one we deserved.
He's the one we got.
I love Michael Keaton.
Yeah.
So, speaking of that, nothing about this movie should have fucking worked.
Just completely mix up that quote, by the way.
Nothing about this movie should have worked. Yeah, that's from Dark Knight.
Nothing.
What? No, the quote.
Dark Knight Rises?
Yeah, the second one. I get him.
I completely screwed it up, but it was something about...
I knew what you were doing.
It's not the hero we deserve.
May not be the hero we need. Yeah, something like that. This movie... about this movie should have worked.
Okay. I could look it up.
But. You have this nobody director named Tim Burton. You have
so before Michael, or after Edward Scissorhands.
Oh, before.
Okay.
Before. You're putting fucking a comedian in the role of Batman. What are you fucking talking about? Like nothing should have worked.
Jack Nicholson, the guy that's at the Lakers games all the time.
Yeah. Man? What is this shit? Although a lot of people are like, I don't know, he could be Joker. But you know, it was supposed to be Robin Williams to the degree that like they used Robin Williams as a bargaining tool. To get Jack Nicholson to do it because Robin Williams was up for the role. And everybody was like, oh, Robin Williams is going to be great.
Robin Williams is Batman?
Yes, no, as the Joker.
That'd be amazing, too, actually.
And it's like none of it should have worked. Nobody really knew who Tim Burton
was.
Tim
Burton was Robin Williams as Joker.
Tim Burton's was this dude who'd worked at Disney and then made Pee-wee's Big Adventure.
Yeah.
And they're like, they're going to give him this comic book movie? Here's the thing I'll say about Batman. I watched it recently with my daughter. And she liked it, but she didn't get it. And I get that. I watched it now and I'm like, I could see how this is a generational thing. Like, you've had so much comic books, you don't understand. You're right. Yeah, we had
burned out
everything we had.
Nothing like it before.
What didn't she get, though?
Well, it's just this movie is very done, very stylistically comic booky. We've had so she's had so much Batman and Flash, and it's so much that she. This movie is tough if you didn't watch it when you watched it. No, she loves action hero or superhero movies. Loves them, like one of her favorite things. But this movie doesn't always hold up to the modern audience where you're going, like, I'm watching the Avengers Endgame, man, and then I go back and watch this weird-ass movie.
It is pretty dark, pretty slow in some spots, and
pretty
gruesome.
I'm going to tell you, and I might get lambasted for this, we pretty much started from Batman 89 to watch up through because she hadn't seen them. And I used to love Batman Returns. It's boring, and Batman's barely in it, and I freaking hate Penguin.
Came out.
Danny DeVito was a great choice. They did was gross. He's disgusting.
Yeah, he shouldn't have been like that.
And pervy, and it's weird. I think one of the things you got to remember...
shouldn't have been Salah and Raiders. And you shouldn't have been the Penguin.
I was like, what are you talking about for a second? I remember. What you got to remember is like everything we had superhero up until this point was not taken serious. None of it was taken serious. Like you said, Superman was the closest, and even
Fantastic
that had gotten
Four,
seen that.
Roger Corman.
I've seen that. I've seen it.
Clips.
That came out after this, actually. That's really scary. I've seen the whole movie. It's not good. Mm. No, but we'd gotten like the Superman movies were the most serious thing. But I would actually say the Incredible Hulk TV series might have been the most serious we got. But like anything that was done was like, what are we watching? And before that, we had Batman, doing the Batusi. Come on, Robin.
Right.
That was a good Adam West.
Well, Boy Wonder. Holy rusted metal Batman, and it was not taken serious and everybody made fun of it. And Tim Burton's like, oh, we're going to make it comical, but in a way that we're going to take that comical a lot darker and serious. And
yeah, when he said some of the holy rusted metal.
That's in the third one.
That was awful.
For example.
Yeah.
What isn't comical in this movie is Bruce Wayne and Batman. He's very dark. They take him very serious, very edgy. They don't ever... You see the angst. You know the pain. You get to feel the pain. You go watch the old TV series and Batman's
very
goofy.
Tim Burton-ness.
Yes.
There's no Robin. And I think later that year in DC Comics, they actually killed off Robin.
Yeah, I remember that.
So that
Death in the Family.
Yeah, that might. Nope. This movie might have something to do with
Batman's
that.
Death in the Family. I was a comic book reader. I was a huge comic book reader, but I didn't read Batman.
Those comics are really dark. Too,
oddly enough,
some of them.
Yeah,
the Killing Joke. Holy shit!
You brought up that Batman people reading. He became your hero. Like it was this movie that got me reading Batman comics, and I read them for you. I still read them. I read a lot of Marvel stuff and a few DC things, but never Batman until this movie came out. And I was like, I want more Batman. So
I want my Batman.
Kevin has one more. So we're going to talk about this and finish this bonus episode up. But, dude, I mean, you're not wrong. 1966. Do you remember what your second choice was?
Good. I would say the good, the bad, and the ugly.
It was the good, the bad, and the ugly. Sergio Leone's 1966. I got my own movie right. Right there, you guys. I mean, that could be enough, but this was Sergio Leone's 1966 epic about a trio of tough as nails vagabonds on the hunt for a missing fortune. Kevin, first of all, why did you pick this?
Well, I mean, actually, to Matt's pick, I was actually thinking about the Japanese films that came before, all these old westerns. But Sergio Leone's, spaghetti western series, starting with this one,
yes, it did
kind of revamp the entire
100%
western genre. Very similar to how Batman changed the superhero scene. Before Good and Bad and the Ugly, you had like John Wayne.
He's always just walking in and...
It's John Wayne. Yeah.
Why do they call it spaghetti
westerns? I got 15 pounds of rum.
Because it's Sergio Leone.
I'm going to die.
So Sergio Leone is an Italian director, which is also kind of weird that they brought him in to direct these westerns. Like nobody... So spaghetti western.
Yeah.
Because he's Italian. Gotcha.
Yeah. No one had really, like, how is this Italian guy going to direct his Western movie? We have, like Kevin said, we had a whole history of guys that were watching Westerns and they expected certain things, and which were all based around Seven Samurai, but they probably didn't know that. Sergio Leone comes in and he creates the spaghetti Western genre. And he changes what audience expect in Westerns. Like, they don't want, after this movie, they expect to see different things. And one of the famous scenes is the standoff, or the trio scene, as it's called at this point. It's regarded as one of the best examples of editing in cinema history. So what Leone did that had not been done before is he would take these weird cuts where he'd start in, like, and then zoom so tight it would be like on an eyeball or stuff. Like, and then when the yes, thank you, Matt, that's perfect.
Like that.
Though. Yeah, kind of like
that's
that.
That's a great example.
And then it would
I did
do
that
these,
manually, by the way. That wasn't editing.
Then he would do like fast cuts between the, like, action scenes where you're like, it almost feels like it's very kinetic and you feel like you're part of what is happening in this movie.
So kind of like Kill Bill.
Yeah. Well, okay. Yeah. Since you mentioned that, Quentin Tarantino is hugely, he was on the list of people that has been, he has talked, the old Asian movies and the old spaghetti westerns have influenced almost everything he's done. So Kill Bill is a direct ripoff of, not ripoff, but is directly inspired by movies like Seven Samurai and movies like Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. Quentin Tarantino is a very big fan of old westerns and old martial art movies. Hugely so.
Like Django. I mean, the original Django, you know, was a spaghetti
western. Spaghetti western. Yep.
Before he was unchained.
So this movie, again, changed the way people would edit films, how they would shoot films. And after this, people, I'll tell you another Western that blew everybody's mind because it did something unheard of to the degree that not every, sometimes people forget it's a Western.
Young Guns.
Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid. Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, you're watching this movie and they're like, they're adding humor, like a very sophisticated humor. And right in the middle of the movie, they stop, they're riding a bike and it's going, raindrops keep falling. You're like, what the hell is this? Because nobody did that. But I love Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid. It's like one of my favorite westerns of all time.
Another one, I'm not sure if you guys ever saw this, but The Wild Bunch by Sam Peckinpah. Sure. That is a gritty one.
So my dad still watches westerns. If you go over to my dad's on any given day, he's probably got a western on.
I remember when
dude, your dad's
True Grit
watch list is very similar to mine. It's very concerning.
Very concerning.
Westerns and Russian submarine documentaries.
You remember what?
It's like, I got the rifleman.
I don't know
on,
why
he's probably got the rifleman.
I don't know why it's concerning, but that's a.
No, I remember the time that we all went and saw True Grit.
Yeah, Dad, me, you, and Dad went and saw True Grit together with the remake, which is fantastic, by the way. I also took him to see 310 to Yuma remake.
I saw that as well with y'all.
He likes westerns. He doesn't go to the movies a lot, but he'll go for a decent western. But it's funny because when you.
So he did Wild Wild West?
He did not. He's probably seen it. He's probably seen it.
Wild Wild West.
But that's based off an old TV series, and I'm sure like that's probably why it did so bad. So many people were like, this is not what we expected to see.
Yep.
And I think there's a whole group of people that kind of like the movie. Like, I don't hate it, but I think I didn't watch the series, so to me it's just a silly action Will Smith movie, and I didn't take it serious, but I know a lot of people were kind of like, what the fuck, you know? I think The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly is a great movie to talk about, though, on this list. Like, it, for guys like me who grew up wanting to make movies, and I went to film school and all this and that, like, I'm not a filmmaker, guys, but just seeing how the way it was edited and those shots, and I can go, like, stew instantly. Quentin Tarantino, right? Yeah, right. Boom. You see the effects in 2020 something, you know. Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, for example, like we still see how that's changed cinematography like to this day. So excellent choice. All excellent choices. All you guys are very intelligent people and excellent choices all around.
No,
just saying that.
You're right. I am just saying it. You're dumb as fuck.
Oh.
I hate your choice.
Yeah.
Kevin,
so we started this episode off with a boner joke that got cut out.
Kevin couldn't even remember. What didn't get cut? We had to restart because somebody forgot to hit record. Not me.
Not me.
These are all great choices. Oh, one more thing. You guys started it off with this. One more thing I wanted to add about The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly that changed cinema. We talked about it, I think, on the Scores episode, and you guys all did it first thing. The music. The music for this is notorious, and that actually changed the way people would score stuff, too. So lots of the effects run deep, my child.
Ennio Morricone.
So there you go. There are... our choices for some movies that changed the industry, and why we think they did. As is always the case, I'd love to hear what you guys think out there. What movies you think, and there were a lot, guys. It was really hard to, I did the pre-show. I like doing the pre-shows. I recorded that a little bit, and you heard some of the other movies that I talked about that could have easily been brought up in this. And, you know, we just got to pick two. So we just kind of go with what we think works, but we'd love to hear your thoughts and movies that you, even if it just changed the way you look at movies. So maybe you watched it and you're like, ooh, wow, I now look at movies a whole new, for example, Evil Dead. I remember seeing it as a kid and I like fell in love with those type of horror movies. It's like horror comedy thing that I'd never really experienced before. So there are movies that I think you watch and you're like, I need more of this in my life. So
kind of like porn.
Porn, yeah, that way you we porn movies that change the industry. Deep and throat.
On that note.
There, you know what's funny is there are a couple of porn movies that we know for a fact changed the world, and Deep Throat is amongst them. Mm-hmm. I've never seen it. I know all about it.
So. Yeah, they brought down Nixon.
What you mean went down on Nixon?
And Matt just walked out.
Talk about tricky dick.
All right, guys, we're gonna end. You can follow us on our social media
if you want to.
At some point there will be a video of this. The recast video should be up now, so you can go, if you listen to it or whatever, you can watch the video where we put up pictures and talk about who we selected for Indiana Jones and Raiders of the Lost Ark, should it be made today. You can follow us online. We are on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, TikTok, and YouTube.
Yeah, beware of the
T-shirt
trolls.
Find us online, we're probably there.
Beware the T-shirt trolls, guys. That is a...
Yeah, that's not real.
I took that shit down. Real. We saw some stuff. If you were a tapeworm and you were up on our Facebook, somebody was trying to say, hey, you can buy tapeworm shirts now. They were very cool. We might actually design some, but those weren't us. We'll let you know for sure when we do. Wasn't us.
But what you should be able to buy soon is... These,
if you're watching the video,
beanies that
we
I'm
have the mixtape beanies, which are fantastic. They look
They're
awesome.
They're gorgeous.
We are going to hopefully start selling those. And we're going to, very minimal, we're going to not be selling a lot, but I think we're going to redesign. And I think we might have somebody we're interested in talking to about doing new T-shirts. And we're going to sell all that a little different. Shirts. We're going to put them up a little different than we did before.
Are we going to do boxer shirts? I'd
like to use some... Yeah. Local businesses, if possible.
There'll be mixtape and Twisted Kid shirts and dildos. I think that's pretty much what we're going to sell.
Dildos? All right.
Oh, man. You want a Twisted Kid
They're
dildo.
They're brand new with your face on them.
No, you don't. I take back everything I just said. We are not making a Twisted Kid dildo. It's not happening. That's wrong.
No.
On levels. I can't discuss right now. With that being said, guys, we always appreciate you guys checking the show out. Please share, please leave a comment and a review. That's always helpful. And that's it, guys. We love y'all, and until next episode comes out, which will be next week, remember to always stay awesome.
Stay awesome.
Stay awesome. Yeah,
there you guys are.
Stay awesome.
Stay awesome.
There are times that you feel like your head is a big old bucket filled with fuzzy dreams, 'cause you wish you were a Muppet, but you can't play the music and you can't light the lights, and it's all you can do just to make it through any more of these lonely nights. So you grab your plate of mixtape and you pop it in the slot, and you scream two words along with all the nerds, 'cause right now, it's all you've got. Stay, stay awesome. Plant a tree inside your heart and let it blossom. Stay, stay awesome. Gotta live your life, don't stay curled up like a possum.